Solitaire Rose Novelcast, All In, Chapter 1. After the fall, and now we start All In. Not much introduction is needed. Here's Chapter 1. All In, Chapter 1. I'd like to buy into the tournament, Johnny said, hoping that he seemed more confident than he felt. Beyond the entry table was a large, brightly lit room filled with poker tables, dealers, and players milling about. He could hear the cacophony of conversations inside, saw a few of the famous players he'd seen on TV over the past 5 years. Inside was the event he had been saving for. Before he could get in, he had to give his life savings to a woman with way too much makeup. She was sitting in a metal folding chair behind a table with a gold tablecloth and a simple printed sign that read, World Tour of Poker, the Tulsa Tournament. Behind the table was a safe. Two armed guards who actually looked like they could hurt someone without trying very hard, and stiff cardboard trays filled with clay poker chips. The rest of the casino had faded away with its loud slot machines and elaborate light shows. He could only think about the room in front of him with poker tables, dealers, and everything he'd worked for the past 5 years. That's $10,000. We only take cash, and we don't give refunds. Are you sure about this? The woman asked. She was a middle-aged woman with blonde hair that looked brittle to the touch and had that drawn look of a woman who'd been starving herself since she was 15 and wasn't about to give up on the idea that being thin was her best asset. Johnny felt a tug on his sleeve and heard his fiancée Dawn say, "That's what I've been asking him the whole way here." "I'm sure," he said, not looking at Dawn. He knew that if he looked over at her, she'd start in on him again. It would become another long discussion about if this was the best use of his money. He reached into his shoulder bag and pulled out the large brick of bills. It was heavier than when he withdrew it from the bank, and he wondered how it could have changed so much from the day before. He took a last look at it, a thick handful of $100 bills, as stiff and as crisp as if they had been printed that morning, wrapped in a thin paper strap that read, $10,000. 5 years of saving. 5 years worth of poker winnings and small dollar limit games. 5 years of putting aside money from his crappy minimum wage jobs while he got himself through college. 5 years of work and 5 years of hoping all came down to the $10,000 in his hand at this point. He knew Don's arguments, and there was a part of him that agreed with them. $10,000 was enough for a down payment on a house, or enough to get set up in a city where they could both find jobs that fit their majors. There was a lot that $10,000 could do, but when he opened the account during his senior year of high school, it had been earmarked for his entry into a big-time poker tournament. It was the start of his career as a professional poker player. Now was not the time to have a crisis of faith. He put the money on the table, and the brittle blonde woman pulled out a small machine and put it on the table. She snapped the paper band around the money and dumped it into the machine. There was a mechanical sound of it being counted. When the money had finished its journey, she took it and wrapped a rubber band around it. She gave Johnny a form to fill out. She then directed him over to one of the many tables that were set up for people to fill out their entry forms. Johnny filled it out in a daze, not really remembering each question as he answered it. He was so close now it made him dizzy. Halfway down the page, he stopped, looked over at Dawn, and motioned her over. When she got there, he whispered, "What is my address?" She looked at him, confused. "Honey," he said, "remember how you need to talk to me like I'm a complete idiot when I'm stressed out?" "Of course," she said. "That's my favorite way of talking to you. It's cute when you admit what everybody has been saying about you behind your back." "Exactly. Now I need you to be a loving, supporting girlfriend who knows where I live and can help me write it down," he said. She knelt down beside him and helped him fill out the rest of the form. He was surprised that he had forgotten his street address, his mother's maiden name, his years playing poker, and his social security number. "Okay," she said as she looked over the sheet. "What are the only hands you bet with out of position until you get to the final table?" "Double aces, double kings, double queens, double jacks, ace king, ace queen, ace jack, and suited connectors if I can limp in," he said quickly and clearly. "Then you remember what's important for the next however many days this thing takes. I'll be busy remembering your name, phone number, and if you've eaten or not," she said, her slightly lopsided grin returning to her face. "Deal," he said. He looked over the form one last time, then looked at Dawn one last time. She was wearing a green dress that wouldn't have been out of place at a formal restaurant. Her red hair was tied in a long braid so that she wouldn't have to worry about styling it while she watched and waited for him to get done today. Her pale skin had a light dusting of makeup that covered up her freckles, and he was, as always, mesmerized by her green eyes. They always seemed huge to him, and they were the first thing he'd noticed about her when they'd met. She had a look of concern on her face, and it was one he wasn't used to. Through college, he'd been the supportive one, getting her through the next paper, the next all-night study session, the next 8 a.m. class. "You look great in that dress," he said, trying to lighten the moment, "and if I wasn't about to kick major poker ass, I'd be doing everything I could to get you out of it." "Big talk for a man who spent the entire car trip down here ignoring my request to stop off at a cheap motel and break whatever decency laws they have in Missouri," she said. "Besides, I'm dressed way too nice for you. A faded Captain America t-shirt covered by a flannel does not exactly get me all tingly in my naughty parts." "You know this shirt brings me luck," he said. "Someone in this conversation once told me that luck was overrated and poker was all about skills." He stood up. That someone wasn't a professional poker player. They kissed, and he didn't want the moment to end. It was electric. He was about to step into a poker tournament that could make him a millionaire. Confident in his abilities, kissing the most beautiful woman he'd ever known. His whole life was in front of him in that moment. He followed up the kiss with a deep hug and whispered to her, "It all starts here. This is our moment." "Quit bragging and start playing," she said. He walked back to the table where now there were four women taking money and checking over applications. He went to the woman he'd given his money to and handed over the papers. She looked them over with the same expression she probably gave to junk mail, box elder bugs on the side of her house, and food past its expiration date when she said, "This all seems to be in order." She reached down and brought up a small cardboard box filled with clay poker chips. He took it from her and looked it over. There were rows of red, green, yellow, and blue chips, all signifying different dollar amounts. He took one last look at Dawn, who said she didn't want to be there on the first day. She looked a bit scared, but was putting on a brave face for him. He waved, and she blew him a kiss. He turned and went into the room. Inside, players were checking out the big board to see where they would be seated. The place was filled with all kinds of people, young, old, outlandishly dressed, people who looked like they'd just rolled out of bed and come down to the casino. He quickly found his way to the board and sussed out where he would be seated for the beginning of the tournament. The next hour or so was a blur as other players came in. Seats filled up, and the tournament director went over the rules patiently over the loudspeaker system. The next hour or so was a blur as other players came in. Seats filled up, and the tournament director went over the rules patiently over the loudspeaker system. Nicely dressed women came around and gave them all copies of the rules in professionally printed booklets that wouldn't have looked out of place in a church if it wasn't for all the discussion about gambling. Johnny was going over numbers in his head as most of this was communicated to him. He already knew the rules and expectations for this tournament, having followed the world tour of poker on TV for years, and having downloaded the information off the internet as soon as he found out that the Tulsa game was closest to him. He was seated at one of the outer tables with nine other players, three of whom were women, which he wasn't expecting. He didn't recognize any of the players, and they went around quickly with names and number of tournaments they'd played in. He lied and said around 20, because he didn't want them sizing him up as a brand new player. They all engaged in some small talk until he heard the magic words over the speaker system. $10 and $20 blinds. Shuffle up and deal. Johnny grabbed six of the red chips and started to shuffle them in his hand, moving one from the back of his stack to the front in a fluid one-handed gesture. The dealer was about his age, dressed in a tuxedo shirt with a bow tie and an open-back vest. He was rail-thin and had a neutral expression on his face as he dealt the cards quickly to each person. The three players in front of him all folded their cards, and Johnny was ready to do so as well when he checked them. He cupped his hands over the card, exposing only the corners to see what they were, and was surprised that he had been dealt a pair of black kings. He took his hands off the cards, looked at the rest of the players, some of whom had already looked at their cards. There were six more players to act, so he quickly checked the pot and said, "I'm coming in for a raise." He shuffled his chips one more time, then took the stack of six $10 chips in his hand and dropped them in front of him. "Raising to $60," he said neutrally. Three of the other players didn't even look at him as he spoke, and he assumed that they had already checked their cards and were going to drop. The next three players quickly passed their cards back to the dealer, and the player who was designated the dealer dropped the white chip that signified his position and said, "I call," placing a stack of six chips directly in front of his cards. The next player, who had already put in a $10 chip as a small blind, looked at his cards one more time, wondering if it was worth defending his money. He looked up at Johnny, who maintained his disinterested look, and then slid his cards back to the dealer, saying, "I hate to give up a blind." Finally, the player who had put in the big blind looked at his cards and frowned. He started tapping his foot, a gesture that had his rather generous stomach bouncing up and down as he did so. He scratched the side of his face as he fumbled with some chips. After a seeming infinity of fidgeting, he said, "Raise to 200. He pulled back his two $10 chips and replaced them with a pair of $100 chips. Johnny was surprised that someone would fire so big right out of the gate, but with his hand he had to call. There was only one starting hand that was better than what he was holding, and the odds that this person had a pair of aces were pretty slim. Besides, it was the first hand of the tournament, and it would be good to get out to a quick chip lead. He waited a bit, not wanting to seem too eager before saying, "Call," in a reluctant voice. He quickly tossed in enough chips to meet the bet. The older gentleman looked at his cards again, frowned, and made a rather big show of it, which Johnny noted. Then he tossed in the chips to meet the bet. The dealer pulled them all into the center pile. He then set one card down, face down, and dealt three cards, face up, that would be the flop. The King of Hearts, the Ten of Diamonds, and the Six of Spades were spread out on the table. Johnny was the first to act and didn't react at all to the flop, which had given him three of a kind, and the highest possible set on the table. He looked at his cards again, more out of show than needing to be reassured that he still had a pair of kings down. He tapped the table with the edge of his hand and said, "Check." The next player, an older gentleman who looked like he'd been playing poker back when it was in the back rooms of dusty Texas bars, reached for his chips. He counted a small stack of $50 chips, finally set a few out, saying, "Raise to 200, wearily. Johnny looked over at the other player, whose stomach was now shaking violently as his leg was bouncing up and down quickly. Johnny wondered if it was a tell, or just a nervous habit the man had when he was under pressure. He didn't look at his cards as he said, "Raise to 1,000. Johnny was able to contain his shock, but the older man wasn't able to. He quietly said, "Are you sure, kid? It's only the first hand of the tournament." "Yeah," the chubby man said, a huge smile breaking out on his face. Johnny knew that the chubby man thought he had the best hand and was just trying to drive the other players out of the pot and take it down quickly. Not the best strategy, he thought to himself, but who am I to question him when I have the best possible hand? Johnny made an elaborate show of counting up his chips and seeing how many he would have left if he called. He then studied the chubby man for a minute, stretching the moment to an uncomfortable length. He watched as the chubby man began to sweat a bit, but the smile never went away, and the leg never stopped quickly bouncing up and down as if he were trying to put out a fire under his heel. "I call," he said, moving the chips in front of him. The dealer quickly counted them and shot him a look that seemed to say, "Have you lost your mind?" The older man quickly tossed his cards to the dealer and said, "That's why I hate the fact that poker's on TV. You never get time to get the flow of a game. It's all fireworks and huge bets now." Johnny wanted to agree, but he kept a stone-cold expression on his face. When he played in small home tournaments and people started the big chip fireworks early in a game, he'd continue to fold until the field was down to three people. Then he would have most of his original stack to work with the players on, as well as a lot of information as to what hands they like to play. However, with the best possible hand sitting in front of him, he saw a great opportunity to pull a lot of money off the other player. The dealer shook his head and dealt the next card, 5 of spades. There's a very slight possibility that the chubby guy was now 4 to a flush, but the odds that he was betting a tenth of a stack on the flop with 3 spades were so small that Johnny dismissed them. He decided it was time to show how strong his hand was, and quickly did some math on what was in the pot. He didn't even check his cards as he said, "Raise to 3,000. It was more than was currently in the pot, and would let the chubby guy know that he either had a powerhouse hand or he wasn't going to be pushed around. Either way, there was no way the chubby guy could call it if he knew anything about poker. However, the chubby guy didn't hesitate at all as he said, "All in," making a hand gesture, indicating he would shove all of his chips in. "What the hell?" the older gentleman said, his face a mixture of shock and disgust. The dealer stared at the chubby guy, not saying a word and trying to maintain a professional demeanor. Johnny, however, had fireworks going off in his brain. He quickly did the math in his head and figured there was a less than 4% chance to lose this hand, as there were only 2 cards that could possibly beat his hand. There was no possibility of a straight. Possibility of a flush was minuscule, and even if the guy had 2 aces or an ace-king pre-flop, Johnny had him beat with 3 kings. He stood up and looked toward the door. He'd been here for a little over an hour, but this was the very first hand. If he called, he would double up and have a huge lead at the table that he could use to quickly pick off players. Or, if he got a run of bad luck, he had enough of a chip stack that he could fold every hand for 2 days and still have chips. He picked up his cards to try and get a read on the chubby guy, but his expression didn't change. He glanced at his cards one last time to make sure he had the kings, and then tossed them down on the table face up and said, "I call." "We have an all-in and a call on table 23, he heard over the loudspeaker, and the dull noise of people playing cards and talking stopped immediately. The chubby guy took his cards out and tossed them face up on the table as well. Johnny saw they were a pair of red tens. The announcer came over to the table with a wireless microphone and said, "We have trip kings against trip tens. No possibility of a flush or straight. The tens need to catch another 10 on the river to stay alive in this tournament." Johnny was a bit annoyed the announcer didn't say that the kings were dominating, but he remembered all the times he watched poker on TV and how he always rooted for the underdog over the player who was clearly in a dominating position, because that made it more fun to watch. "And the final card is," the announcer said, building the drama and suspense. In his mind, the time it took for the player to put down the card, face down, and then flip up the final or river card was an eternity. As he waited, he thought about what it was going to be like to come out for the final table with cameras everywhere. He went through what he practiced saying in the interview they would show after he won his first hand, and how beautiful Dawn would look on camera. All this flashed through his mind in vivid colored detail, with imagined camera angles and visions of the money being shoved at him as he smiled and showed his winning hand. He had never bought a watch in his life, knowing that he would instead want the winner's bracelet that came with winning a major poker tournament. As he turned back to the table, he heard the announcer say, "Ten of clubs comes on the river. Paul Trejas has 4 tens and knocks out Johnny Finch on the first hand of the tournament." Johnny looked down at the table and watched as the dealer shoved the 2 tens forward, indicating they were part of the winning hand. The rest of the world faded away. His entire focus was on the 5 cards sitting there on the felt. He was numb, and things in his mind faded to a dull gray, as if all the color and sense had just washed out of the world. He felt a hand on his shoulder and a voice say, "That's a bad beat, son. I would have called too, but that's why they deal the cards." Johnny couldn't move. He didn't even know if he was breathing as he watched all of his chips move across the table to the chubby guy, who laughed and said, "I had a feeling I'd get that 4th 10, to the players that had gathered to watch the hand. He heard the announcer say, "Our first player eliminated, Johnny Finch, on the very first hand." But it was a voice that was tinny and ever so far away. It was as if he heard it in a dream. He was watching as the chubby guy was shaking hands with the other players, who were now returning to their seats. "Sir," he heard through the haze, "you'll have to leave the table." He looked up and saw the dealer was holding a freshly shuffled deck of cards and glaring at him. I had a full house. Kings over tens, Johnny finally said, regaining a bit of his composure. But he had four of a kind, sir. Your tournament is over, the dealer said kindly.
He was beat, Johnny said. I had tripped kings and he had tripped tens. He had a less than 4% chance to catch that ten.
Are you sure the card wasn't a nine? Or an eight or something?
I'm sure, sir, the dealer said as he made a subtle gesture of waving his hand. A beat later, two men in impeccable suits appeared on either side of Johnny. The bigger of the two said, Sir, your tournament is over. We'll have to ask you to leave the table.
Johnny looked around the table and saw that everyone was looking at him. The reality of the situation was not sinking in. He looked down at the small cardboard box that had held $10,000 worth of poker chips less than 3 minutes before. He looked around the table at the chubby man and said, I have no idea why you went all in like that.
The chubby guy shrugged and smiled and said, I've always been lucky, you know.
Sir, the bigger of the security men tapped him again on the shoulder, this time hard enough that it hurt. You need to leave the table.
He walked past the other tables. He saw the people who were not involved in a hand were watching him walk out the door.
He wasn't able to meet their eyes, but kept looking at the exit as he walked toward it. Each step got heavier as he realized the weight of what had happened. 5 years of saving, all gone in a single hand of cards. He had no idea what he was going to do now. As he left the room, the only thing on his mind was the fact that for some reason, he could no longer remember what his major was.